The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom. Unfortunately, I am not Suzanne Z. Pedro, but I am her guest host for the day, and I have a fantastic guest with me today. We've done a lot of episodes on the show. Suzanne's done a lot of episodes on personal empowerment, and do you feel personally empowered? What about your neighbor or the person sitting across from you on the bus? And we've heard a lot about together we can change the world. And this week, our guest is David Gershon, who is co-founder and CEO of the Empowerment Institute, which is one of the world's foremost authorities on behavior change, community empowerment, and large system transformations. His clients include cities, large organizations, government agencies, and social entrepreneurs. And for over the past 30 years, the empowerment programs he has designed have won many awards, and a major academic study described them as unsurpassed in changing behavior. He's used this empowerment proficiency to conceive and organize at the height of the Cold War in partnership with the UN Children's Fund and ABC Television, the first Earth Run, and he's the author of 11 books. He's lectured at Harvard, MIT, and Johns Hopkins, and he served as an advisor to the Clinton White House and to the United Nations. So we are very lucky to have with us today David Gershon. Welcome, David.
Pleasure to be with you, Celine. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. My first question, I guess, is what is the Empowerment Institute?
Well, the Empowerment Institute got started some 33 years ago with a question. And it's a very simple question, and it's taken us on a journey. The question was, what's possible for us as human beings? And when we asked that question, we went on a journey to start answering. And it really took us down the path of building visions of possibility for our lives and for our world. And when we began, there was no real knowledge of anything called empowerment. We were the early pioneers of this idea. I mean, others have picked up on it as well. So it's not exclusive to our work, but to us, but we were among the very first. And over that time, we built a training program called the Empowerment Workshop. And it really began to help people begin to dream for their lives and begin to make those dreams come true. And then out of that, we began to look at what was allowing that to be successful. And before we knew it, we were training people in the practice of empowerment. And eventually it led to a certification program, the Empowerment Institute. And it also put us in a position where we found ourselves a global laboratory for people asking the question about empowerment. How do we empower ourselves to live our dreams and create the world that we want? So essentially, that's been the journey. It's a journey that we continue to be on, but it's been a very rich journey of learning over the last several decades.
Oh, wow. And can individuals take a course there, or is it mainly for groups or corporations?
It's for all of the above. Individuals can participate in our Empowerment Institute. We start our next certification program in January, and they can learn more about it at our website, empowermentinstitute.net. And companies, you know, I work with companies also on how to bring this to their employees and to really upgrade the quality of a culture that enables learning and growing, and to cities. I mean, pretty much the fundamentals of empowerment, enabling someone to envision and create what they want, can apply at every level of scale, from the individual to a block to a neighborhood to a community to an organization to a country to a planet.
Okay, and I know, speaking of a planet, I know I mentioned briefly in the intro, but I definitely want to hear more about it from you directly, the first Earth run. I know it took you, I read somewhere that it was 10 years in the making, and it involved 25 million people in 62 different countries.
Yep. It was a great
That's
adventure.
Amazing.
Well,
tell us what it was? Or?
Sure.
Yeah.
The backstory was and is that it happened in 1986, and at that moment in time, the world was in a very paralyzed state with Russia and America arming each other, itself, against each other, with the thought of a nuclear disaster very, very prominent in everyone's mind. We were at the height of the Cold War, and the thought at that moment came to me. I had organized the Olympic torch relay, and a lot of these have great adventures prior to that of passing a torch around from the great Hall of Hera in Greece through Air Force One to the opening of the 1980 Olympics. So I had this experience, mm-hmm. another story how that came about, of passing fire around via runners, and the thought came, you know, to do this thing around the world and to use it as a kind of a way to build a different orientation rather than how do we stop a war, how do we stop the annihilation of humanity, how do we begin to create a unitive field, how do we come together as a human family, how do we pass the torch around the world in the spirit of cooperation. And so it's very much based on what I've been saying all along, which is that we have to build a vision of what we want if we want to create a new possibility. And we did that. And it's a very long story of 10 years and lots of trial and error and lots of challenges and lots of near failures. But for whatever the reasons, some of which I would call grace, we were able to pull it off. And we got the world to play with us. 45 heads of state, 20% of the planet were tracking in. ABC was our partner as they watched through Good Morning America, the flame go around the world. And what it did fundamentally was it started to create a different energy on the planet, a sense of possibility, a sense of hopefulness, a sense that we can control our destiny. And, you know, at certain levels that are sort of not even what you would call material levels, maybe you call it spiritual levels, there was an energy shift. And it's hard to know exactly how all these things influence things in the physical material plane, but many people thought this was helping to shift that sort of destructive and contracted energy. To be determined, hard to know, but it was a profound experience for me. It was a very powerful experience in the world, and it certainly shaped my belief that anything is possible, that really the impossible is possible, and I've been dangerous ever since because I keep operating with that belief and keep trying new things that no one thinks possible.
Well, I mean, that's a great belief, and you know, 10 years in the making, I mean, that's a long time to be working on something without actually seeing a result. I know a lot of people probably, if they have a dream, you know, those who still allow themselves to dream, if they have it, they sometimes don't, you know, if they don't see immediate results, they get worn down and they give up, but you didn't, so that's very inspiring.
Well, I'll tell you one of the reasons that I think it was able to be sustained by me that long and how people can sustain a dream over time is it has to, Gandhi had a great word for it. He called it Satyagraha, or soul force. And the more that you are aligned with your deeper purpose for being, your soul force, if you will, the more you really aren't at choice. You need to do this so that you can fulfill this deeper purpose, this higher purpose that you've come to the planet for. And this was one of the things that I felt I had come to do. I mean, that was not the only expression that would be a way for me to express this, but it was certainly the one that I needed to do to move to the next levels of the work that I've come to do. So when someone has that level of self-knowledge and self-awareness, and then you stay with something long enough and you keep learning how to get feedback and iterate based on the feedback, it's not as hard as it might seem.
Wow, and I know there's been so much going on in the world today, and we're not necessarily in, quote-unquote, a cold war right now, but there is war, and, I mean, even our own country, I know a lot of people have been affected both personally and emotionally by what happened last week in Charleston.
Yep.
I guess I just want to know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, a lot of people just, you know, are fed up with it. Do we just stop watching the news, or what do we do?
Well, a great question. I mean, the world is complicated, and change is hard, and it doesn't happen overnight. And so we have different setbacks, and there will always be individuals, disturbed individuals, who will do things. And so what does one do about it? I mean, for me, we have progressed around the issue of racism in America. We're not where we need to be, but we are certainly further along than where we've been. The Confederate flag looks like it's coming down from the capital of South Carolina. So I look at where we're going and not where we've been. I don't look at the, you know, Bill Clinton has a wonderful phrase. He calls it looking at the trend lines and not the headlines, because the headlines are maybe not as accurate as the trend lines of where humanity is evolving. Now, that said, one should be discerning on how one takes in news and how one tries to interpret things. But I'm an optimist about humanity. It's based on my belief that we want to have a better life for ourselves. And if given an opportunity and the tools to do such, we will seize them. We do a lot of work, our institute, in the developing world around women's empowerment in the most disenfranchised environments one could imagine. And we see transformation all the time. So again, it's where you focus your energy. And again, using the tools this show is devoted to helping people learn about of empowerment to be able to make those changes.
Right. Well, and I thought it was interesting, too. I mean, he said he wanted to create a race war, but if anything, I think it's brought everybody in that community and around the country, at least, closer together.
It's, so it's kind very of interesting
of what he wanted.
When we... I'm just offer one thought on that. When we were organizing the first Earth Run, we met a woman who was her name was Grandmother Caroline, and she was the keeper of the Hopi prophecy that we can create a world of peace in the future, 1,000 years of peace. And they were asking us to deliver this they called the Great Hall of Micah, which was this 1,000-year prophecy that they were fulfilling through the first Earth Run at that moment in time. And when she spoke, she said something very insightful to me. She said, you know, you need to know how to interpret the signs, because it's very easy to get confused by what you see externally. So on the one hand, we have this thing happen that's very disturbing. And on the other hand, it brings everyone together and it evolves us. So it's important to know how to interpret these things. And I think you were very astute to see what, in fact, has really happened as a result of this.
Right. Well, and I guess it can kind of give people hope on an individual level, too. I mean, even not something quite so earth-shattering, but just in your everyday life.
Yep.
You know, if something goes wrong, that's not always going to be forever how it is. You're not going to always be in that state. Like, it's going to change. Things are going to change, and maybe that happened to bring about a change for a good reason or something.
And we have that choice moment by moment on how we interpret events and how we can go towards the learnings from them. So by all means, absolutely. And again, that's one of the, I would call them the disciplines of being in having more conscious life or more conscious awareness of how things show up in the world, is knowing what to do with them and how to go towards them and learn from them, because the opportunities are around us all the time.
Absolutely. And I know you've been described as one of the world's foremost authorities on behavior change, community empowerment, and large system transformation. Can you just tell us a little bit, our listeners, a little bit about your background and how you got there?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, if you will, empowerment is around changing a behavior. Because if you
have insight and awareness, but you're not able to change behavior, you haven't gotten very far. So the work that I have done has been really boiled down to, I boil it down to, does someone now do something different than they did before as a result of something that they want in their lives? Or does an organization do something different as a result of what it wants in its future? And so to do that, one needs to understand the mechanism of behavioral change. And we've developed a four-step process. We call it the empowerment methodology, which really has four simple questions that we help people ask. Where am I now? Or what is my awareness level? What do I want it to look like, or the vision? And what do I need to change to get there, or the transformational process of identifying and transforming belief systems that are limiting my ability to see the vision happening? And then what's my next growth step, which is really where do I want to grow? What does it look like when I put all that together, and how do I then translate that into a clear statement of intention with a visual image? So we call that awareness, vision, transformation, and growth. And at the heart of all of the work that I do at whatever level of scale, we help people to deploy this transformational operating system. So, you know, that's a short version of a process in the empowerment workshop. They do that in seven areas of life around relationships, their body, their emotions, sexuality, money, work, and I think one other that I didn't quite get. And that's the process. And one can do that also, I do that in my environmental work around leading a green lifestyle or a more resilient lifestyle or a more livable neighborhood. You know, breaking down the content into discrete pieces and then showing people how step-by-step they can create the changes. So that's the process of behavioral change, and really the behavior change is at the heart of empowerment.
And what do you do about, I mean, it sounds like if you're already asking those questions, you're sort of already on the right path. What do we do about the people who should be asking themselves these questions or should be seeking out your workshop but aren't that aware yet? How do you reach out to them?
That's a good question. I mean, usually the people that I work with are asking questions. That's why they show up in my world. But there are people who have roles to play which are more sort of for more basic, which is to raise awareness about opportunities. And there are people, lots of people doing that. Like this show is a fantastic version of that. And there's a timing for people. There has to be a right time for someone to want to go on a path of self-development and evolution itself. And not everyone is ready for that, so patience is required. Sometimes people are catalyzed by a problem or tragedy in their life, and they have to look at themselves. Sometimes just by waking up and saying, you know, I know there's something more out there. I don't know what it is, but I want something more in my life. Because there's the fundamental need in human beings to improve themselves, to make their life better. So that drive is alive. It just shows up in different ways.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we actually have to go to a short break.
No problem.
And we'll be right back with David Gershon of the Empowerment Institute.
Fantastic.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk
Radio
Network. Are you
just sitting on the
sidelines? And you can add your voice
to
the...
Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America. Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Celine Holmes here today, filling in for Suzanne Pedro. And we are talking to the wonderfully inspiring and empowering David Gershon of the Empowerment Institute, CEO and co-founder of the Empowerment Institute. And we were just talking about empowerment, and so David, I wanted to know, the people who are already at that place where they're asking, where am I now and what do I want, are there some everyday skills or strategies that you could give on air just for our listeners that could help them start to move forward or start to make that journey?
Sure. I mean, it's a very simple thing. The starting point is to believe that you can have your life be the way you want it. The book we wrote, Empowerment, the Art of Creating Your Life as You Want It, is very much about the belief that we can have our life the way we want it. So once one has that, then the question is, what do I want? And basically, people, you know, really have two places that they tend to be. They know what they want, but they haven't learned how to get it, or they don't know what they need or want, rather. And so their journey is to ask the questions, what do I want? But the starting point is to believe that you can have it, and then ask a simple question, what do I want my relationship to look like? And what would I like my relationship to money to look like? And what would I like my relationship to my body to look like? And then once you ask that question, you then begin to translate that into a vision. You know, I would like it to look like this and this and this. And you begin to have something that drives you forward, because vision pulls you forward. What's wrong and how do I fix it does not pull you forward. It tends to contract you. But when you have something that's clear and that you can articulate, then it creates a pull. And the key to empowerment is a pull, a vision that pulls you so that you want to go towards it. And then after that, then the next question would be, well, what do I actually need to do to make that happen? Or what do I need to change currently that I'm not doing to make that happen? And then you identify beliefs. Well, I'd like to have that kind of well-being in my body, but I don't take time each day to care for it. Well, then what could I do to start to care for it? But remember, the key to changing and getting someone to go towards something is a vision that pulls them. So it's no longer, I want to do this, but I don't know, I don't know if I can get my will up. It's more the vision that's pulling. So that's a very simple idea. And then the third step here would be, it's in the four steps, but I started with step two, would be, okay, so I know I want this quality of health in my body. I know that I have to be able to, somewhat simplistic but accurate, I know I have to now do certain things that I'm not doing. Now I make an intention. I take time every day to do something that makes my body healthy, and then I see myself acting in that way. So this is how one constructs a new belief system, and then we water it daily by intention, by just affirming it. It's kind of like planting a seed in the garden. You have to water it regularly for the seed to grow, but first you have to have the seed, and then you can start to water it. So that's simply speaking, you know, the process.
I like that image too, yeah.
Pardon?
And so how, I like that image of the seed growing and, like, you know, you're planting a seed yourself, but for something that you want. And how important throughout all of this is, like, journaling or writing down your desires or your wishes?
I would say writing it is very important. It makes it concrete. And then affirming it each day, reading it and affirming it, visualizing it is very important. I mean, this is how great athletes, you know, succeed or anyone achieves any goal, is you have to write it down. Even if you don't have it in the most perfect language, just writing it down is hugely powerful. So, but once you've done that, then it doesn't require to keep doing it. You just have to practice it. You have to water the seeds each day.
Right. And so I know you do a lot of work with corporations and groups. What do you recommend if there's an individual, say, in a company that sees a need for change, but the rest of the company doesn't feel that need, and they have to sort of inspire the rest of the people, or yep. What do they do?
Well, it depends on what level the individual is. If it's the CEO of a company, then they have influence and they can begin to move something along. If it's an individual within a department who sees possibility, then he or she has to make a case for it. And, you know, again, as you'll start to see the pattern here, generally what tends to happen when someone sees something that has to change is they explain how bad it is and how we have to change to get there. What that tends to do when we focus on what's wrong, we call it the shift from pathology, or what's wrong, to vision, which is what's possible. When you start to move people towards the vision of what's possible, you can, again, get more people interested. It would be fantastic if we were able to have this kind of communication amongst ourselves in this department. We'd be able to accomplish so much more. Here's a process that can help us do that. Versus, you know, our communication sucks. We're not able to really work well with each other. It's really a drag coming to work. We should change. And,
right.
You know, I'm kind of exaggerating the two examples, but one, again, creates a pull in the system. It creates a vision. It shows what's possible. It excites people's imagination. And the other just laments the current status quo and tends to cause people to contract and they can't see a way forward. So that's a very key strategy for getting something to happen that's not currently happening in a culture and organization.
Okay, that makes total sense. And I know you
that
have another...
Most of this that will make sense because it's common sense when you come to understand how it works. Yep.
Right, and when you put it into words the way you just did, then it makes sense. So I know you have another best-selling book called Social Change 2.0.
Yes.
Was there a social change 1.0, or what's the 2.0?
Well, there is a social change 1.0, which is the current way that social change exists. And so this is a big question. So let me give you the current social change model that's in play right now, which is frustrating for many people because they can't see it getting the traction that they might wish. So social change 1.0 is try to pass a law that commands and controls someone to change, or try to get people to change based on financial incentives, paying someone to change, or disincentivizing someone from doing something by telling them we'll have to pay, you know, more for that as a tax cost or whatever. Or social protest, you know, lamenting the current state of what's going on. Or awareness, you know, we need to do this and you should do that. So those are what I call social change 1.0. And what is generally done in most social change strategies is one or more of those four strategies. And they're okay to get certain level of change to happen. But when we reach a point where the kind of change that's required is much greater, what I would call transformational change rather than incremental change, requires a different kind of approach. It requires an approach that can fundamentally move a social system to a higher level of performance and social value. So, for example, climate change is stalled a lot because we can't get the laws passed, or the education system is unable to get the quality of education that we might want, or even though we have a health care law, we're still health isn't necessarily improving in people, although they now have better access to insurance, or our financial system isn't at the levels that we would like it, and we're in constant state of, you know, anxiety about it breaking down in different forms, and in some places it's breaking down, in some places it's just hanging in there. So most of our social systems need to be fundamentally transformed to be able to achieve the kind of performance that's required. But those approaches aren't able to do it. So what's required from a systems point of view, when those kinds of changes are required and the current approach to change does not enable that kind of change, it's called second-order change. And that's moving the system to a higher level of performance and social value. It requires behavioral change. It requires community engagement. It requires large system transformation. It requires all those things that you ascribe to me in terms of my skills. And Social Change 2.0, the book I wrote, is how to do second-order change. So it's really about how to get people empowered to want to change on the block that they live on, in the streets that they, on the community they live in the organization that they're part of, in the part of the social systems that they're engaged in. So it's about a vision. It's about a lot of things I've been talking about very simply. It's a lot more sophisticated because it's trying to create change at a larger level of scale than an individual. But the model and the principles are very similar.
And so I know you do a lot of work. You have a lot of your clients are cities and government agencies. Is that a lot of what they're coming to you for, that this sort of second order
very change? Much so. I mean, what cities are discovering and what organizations are discovering is that they can't get the change that they want in their current approaches. Again, awareness-raising campaigns or informational, you know, skills that they teach. I mean, it requires a deeper dive into the kind of knowledge that I've been describing. So, yes, they will come to me and they'll ask for help. And I spent a lot of time working in all those domains, building programs to enable them to help conserve water or lower the carbon footprint or be able to deal with disasters, you know, like in New York City after 9/11. I was one of my clients. Or dealing with helping people learn to live more sustainably. It goes on. I mean, there's a lot of different domains where people, cities need, individuals need what's called pro-social behaviors, behaviors that help them but also help the larger community in which they're part to function better.
Okay, wow. It just seems like a massive undertaking. I can't even imagine where you start with that.
Well, read my book, Social Change 2.0, and you learn. It's pretty detailed.
I'm going
to. It's a blueprint for reinventing our world, so it's literally laid out as a blueprint, and you'll know how to do it. And not to say you can do it just by reading it, but it's a start. It'll give you the ideas for those that are listening in who are interested in societal change at whatever level of scale they want to bring about change.
And I read somewhere that you talked about empowering the space.
Yes.
Can you explain what that is and how one goes about doing that?
Well, you've been doing a lot of deep reading and thinking and exploring our website. So that's a very distinct phrase that's part of how we teach empowerment to practitioners of empowerment, people whose job it is to create empowerment experiences in organizations or within groups. So empowering the space is the term that we use to describe the process of creating an environment where there is a deep level of trust that it's safe to try new things, to learn and grow. It creates a culture where people are willing to go to places they've never been before in their lives to try out new behaviors. So it's really about creating an environment of safety and trust so that people feel this is a good place to begin to learn and to take risks and to go to new places I've never been before in my life. In fact, we have a phrase in our workshop, our empowerment workshop and other trainings that I lead, which is it's very much like if you have a current belief system that's currently in play and you haven't gone to the new one yet that you want, there's this weightless state. And that weightless state between belief systems, it's not who I want to be, but I don't quite know how to be the other person yet that I would aspire to be, is kind of like there's no gravity. And so one has to learn how to be deal with the discomfort. And we call that learning how to be comfortable with this kind of uncomfortability. And so an empowerment space, empowering the space, creates that kind of safety to be able to explore this transition from one belief system that I have operated with that's no longer serving me to a new belief system that I have not yet stepped into. So that's what we mean by empowering the space.
And we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to give you some time to tell people how they can reach you and all. But I do want to know, before we go, how important is it for an individual to change themselves or to make that change on a personal level before they go on to tackle a greater change, like in society?
Well, I mean,
do you feel comfortable with yourself first? Or
yeah, I mean, I see it as very much like an in-breath and an out-breath. You know, you have to take, to do any of the work in the world, you have to be also doing work on yourself, or else you project your unresolved issues onto the social change that you want. So lots of angry people sometimes are putting out all of that anger into the world, which is actually not getting the result that they want. So it's very much a process of both, and I have to work on myself so that I can bring more to the process. If I just work on myself and I don't try to bring anything out to the world, then I become very self-absorbed. If I go out in the world but I
don't have
the interior work, then I don't have the quality of value that can make the world a better place. So it's very much both and.
Okay, and balancing both of those, I guess.
Absolutely.
Finding that balance.
Yep.
Well, David, I'm so sorry. We're coming to a close. We've got about 2 minutes left, but I want you to tell people how they can find you and your website, the Empowerment Institute, and what's next for you.
They can find out everything I've been talking about at our website, empowermentinstitute.net, one word, empowermentinstitute.net. What's next for me is figuring out how to keep the planet viable, how to help humanity evolve. These are my big objectives for my life work, and I've got a big project on climate change called the Cool City Challenge. That's another exciting project. I wrote a new book called The Cool Block, which is really a lot of this knowledge on how to change the world from the block that you live on. That's not out yet. That'll be probably a while. I'm doing a pilot next year in Palo Alto on this. And I'm also, this another thing that might be interesting to people is another program called the ImagineProgram.net, which is all about women's empowerment in the developing world. Some great videos there. So lots of things. I continue to have big dreams for our world and believe that we can change it for the better. So I'm living it.
Wow. Well, David, it has been so inspiring listening to you, and I know our listeners, I think, probably got a lot out of hearing you, and I feel I'm ready to go out and take on the world personally. And
well, we need your help, so thank you.
So thank you so much for being our guest.
Do their best.
And,
thank you. My pleasure.
Very inspiring. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
All right,
now.
We'll see you all next week.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.